Dean Knight, good morning.
Kia ora, Catherine.
I'm just trying to find all your titles. Here we go. Associate Professor, Faculty of Law in New Zealand Centre for Public Law, Victoria University of Wellington. And it's been a busy old year, so sally forth with some of the big decisions that the Supreme Court and Court of Appeal have been considering affecting all of us, really, public law.
And I should say it's actually probably only 3 months, because I think we've got a year's worth of cases out from those courts in the last 3 months. So I'm going to have to do a little bit quick fire if we can. But starting with the Supreme Court, really big decision on three strikes legislation, where the Supreme's read in an important gloss on that mandatory imposition of the maximum sentence on someone committing a third strike. And they said, you can't impose that if it would lead to a disproportionately severe punishment contrary to the Bill of Rights Act. I know that's the case we talked about earlier in the year, and you might want to come back to that, but you know that's a big case in itself. Te Tiriti, a really important ruling in Trans-Tasman Resources, a case about mining iron sands, where we had a really important, significant ruling of principle, where the court's effectively saying that where the government has a discretion about what to do, a power to exercise, that discretion must be exercised consistently with treaty principles, regardless of whether Parliament has inserted a treaty clause in the legislation. And that's, I should say, that's not an unexpected development and one we talked about earlier in the year, but it's significant that the Supreme Court has spelt that out. So two big points of principle, if you like, about how from the Supreme Court kicking off in September and October. Court of Appeal wasn't shy either. They struck down a targeted rate on commercial accommodation providers, a hotel tax, because the council, the Auckland Council, failed to adequately grapple with the costs and benefits and effectively imposed a disproportionate burden on the taxed hotels. The Court of Appeal also in the action on last year's lockdown, and the court rejected an appeal from Dr. Borrowdale, ruling that if you go back to, was it March, April last year, that the level 3 and level 4 health orders issued by Dr. Bloomfield, closing premises, prohibited public congregation and requiring folk to stay at home, those orders were lawfully issued, even though they limited or potentially limited important rights and freedoms. In that case, feels like a little bit of a historical artifact now, I think, but we may want to come back to that one. Court of Appeal also looked at post-release regimes for those worst offenders, extended supervision orders and public protection orders, sort of continuing conditions imposed after a prisoner has done their time and restricting their liberty. Court of Appeal, an important ruling, ruled that they amounted to, these regimes amounted to double punishment and could not be justified by the government on harm prevention grounds. So legislation stands because it couldn't be invalidated, but the court there issued declarations of inconsistency on rights grounds, bringing that back to Parliament's attention. So significant ruling in that space. I'm going to have to take a breath now and say the Court of Appeal also got involved on some voting rights, recently ruling that the government had not adequately demonstrated that denying 16 and 17 year olds the vote was justified under the Bill of Rights Act. So the government hadn't made the case to justify their exclusion from the franchise. But interestingly enough, the court declined to issue a declaration of inconsistency about the legislation. So didn't make a formal sort of note bringing it to Parliament's attention, but was left those questions of whether the 16 and 17 year olds were able to vote to the public and political debates that they saw were ongoing. So by my count, that's probably four really super interesting cases out of the Court of Appeal. And then if we go down into the High Court, we see a series of pandemic-related cases. Just run through them quickly. We had three High Court judges and three separate cases ruling that the workplace vaccine mandates were lawful and, importantly, did not unjustifiably limit people's right to refuse medical treatment. So three cases giving those the green light. We also had a High Court judge ruling that MB failed to properly consider a rich lister's request to self-isolate at home rather than MIQ when returning from a business trip abroad. And probably my favourite and I think most interesting case of the year for me, the High Court ruled twice that the Health Ministry's failure to disclose individual data about unvaccinated Māori to the Whānau Order Commissioning Agency was unlawful and failed to give effect to treaty principles. So I think that's probably 9 cases out of the courts. And can I just do one postscript?
Yeah, please.
And say we've got to acknowledge the Waitangi Tribunal ruled today that the vaccination program and the move to the traffic light systems breached treaty principles. And I think that'll be an important report for many, very rich reading in that report. So I think I'm exhausted just listing those.
Do you know what? Does Catherine? That, I know there's a lot happening at the moment, but is it really encouraging to see so much healthy constitutional debate before the courts?
Oh, absolutely. And we're sort of pondering what's given rise to this. Because the interesting thing, the courts are reactive. They respond to what gets put in front of them. And what's interesting is that people are bringing cases to the courts on judicial review and seeking to ventilate what are important, you know, human rights issues and democratic issues as well. We've always been a bit shy about doing that in New Zealand. My sort of read is New Zealand community tends to want to ventilate their angst through the political democratic processes. And it's interesting to see in this last 3 months, you know, sort of a rise of the legal constitutionalism, people trying to get the court's view on these sorts of things. And so, yeah.
The other is the climate. The climate situation, which of course is a court case brought much earlier. Part of me wonders whether it's generational and a particularly active generation. Although the likes of Andrew Borrowdale, of course, very experienced. He worked in Parliament, I think, and drafted legislation there. But also, I wonder if this pandemic and what it's requiring of us is just really firing up a very healthy testing of things.
Yeah, and that. There is, I think, a generation that wants to hear the judges speak on the rule of law and the propriety of things, and the courts are rising to that challenge in some cases, but not others. There's sort of a sense that there is a dialogue between our institutions, our courts, the executive, and the legislature, and the courts have something to offer in that debate and those discussions on some aspects. But what we also see is you know, you see this in the pandemic cases, is the successes before the courts have been in very individualized situations where you've got particular people with a particular story about that is quite exceptional that they're pleading for, you know, fair and adequate treatment. They're getting some success perhaps, but what we're not seeing is the courts being prepared to sort of undercut that sort of broad thrust of the response. You know, so Borrowdale's case, didn't succeed in knocking over the original health orders, and you know, a little bit more of a generous interpretation being afforded by the court. So it's very much a horses for courses in terms of, I think, how the courts are reacting.
Yes, but healthy that scrutiny is on. Now, you've got just under 5 minutes, about 4 and a bit minutes, to run through your awards if you want to do that.
I've already mentioned my most memorable case on the Whānau Order Commissioning Agency, that access to the facts that vaccination data. I think it gives Te Tiriti and tikanga real bite in government decision making, and it's very much a slap. The government gets a slap from the courts for making lots of platitudes about partnership with Māori, but very much a failure to operationalise those. A very important case that I think we'll be teaching for years in our law schools. Can I say the dullest decision that I've read this year is the Borrowdale case in the Court of Appeal, and I suspect it was deliberately so from the court. It's the case we talked about all last year, ad nauseam, Catherine, and it barely got a mention when it came out because it was so uninteresting. It was the court very much just trying to read words in the statutes naturally in the light of their emergency purpose without insisting on an overly friendly, rights-friendly interpretation. So, just dull. It was just very dull. And probably draws a line under that part of the pandemic response.
One of the biggest?
Most muscular decision is the one on three strikes. I think it's probably the most creative reading of legislation we've seen in a long time to try and ensure that the rights, the legislation is read consistently with rights, and imposing that gloss to say you can't sentence someone to a third strike, even though it's we're directed to, because it would be contrary to the protection against disproportionate and severe treatment of the Bill of Rights Act. What's interesting in that case is that I think the courts there, the Supreme Court, very much played the words of Parliament back to them, saying, well, your purpose here was to deal, in passing the three strikes legislation, was to deal with the worst type of offenders, and this person before us isn't. So they read the words down in the legislation to put that important gloss on there. And it's very unclear about whether the signals are a general change in the way that the courts are going to read legislation in the light of the Bill of Rights.
Accepting, is it not the court's purpose to interpret the intention of Parliament? And sometimes it will go back and ask for clarification, but isn't that what its purpose is?
Well, what the difficulty here is, what is the intention of Parliament?
Well, they've read the words and said to punish the very worst offenders.
That's right, and the Legislation Act directs the courts to interpret words in the light of the read the text of the legislation in the light of their purpose and context. Huh. And what they said is, when you read those words in the light of the purpose that was debated around Parliament to deal with those worst type of offenders, you have got to read those words down, because it's not just in, you know, what the words themselves say, that's the words read in context in the light of purpose.
Just a minute left then. Have you seen a year quite like it? Or 3 months, as you said. Been a while.
Oh, we're just utterly exhausted reading all these cases. We're hoping the courts are going to go on holiday and not issue any more decisions, because it is, and I don't want know if something's been in the water that's caused all this lineup of cases. Certainly the pandemic ones were expected, and as the sort of social license is starting to fray, we expect to see a little bit more testing of the cases around the margin. We know we've got things like the managed isolation and quarantine challenge being heard in the High Court, and I think late January, I suspect we might see some litigation about the traffic light system and the vax mandate. So the pandemic, we expect, would eventually generate a suite of cases as that social license began to fray. But I'm not sure what's given rise to this all these other sort of big tsunami of cases.
It's healthy, and it's given you plenty to do in the day job. Have a great Christmas and a great holiday. Thanks very much, Dr. Dean Knight.